Well, good afternoon, everybody. So thank you for having me, and thank you for putting me in this panel, because what I heard so far like really echoes some points that I have made myself in my study, particularly the fact that it's really about observations and to record and try to publicize those observations. So that's also the idea there behind my title. Which is a bit provocative, but I think mutual understanding is one of the most overused formulas when talking about EU-China relations, and it's kind of the case on both sides. But we now know that China invests a lot in its influence systems, and everything that emanates from the Chinese party state serves in a way or another projects like the Belt and Road Initiative and by extension Beijing narrative. So the idea behind my paper was to demonstrate that in Brussels there are organizations and individuals that promote Beijing's narrative, and that this effort is coordinated by the party. And so far there hasn't been much work on it except Lulu's article, so I think it was really needed. The channels of influence that I've identified involve many sectors, European and Chinese people, local and high-level structures, and they really contribute to shaping a positive image of China through cultural, academic collaborations and economic relations. And I want to emphasize also the fact that I'm focusing on Brussels, because we need to show also that it's not only anymore about former Soviet satellite states and that or China's traditional sphere of influence. And obviously Brussels hosts the EU institutions, and I think to raise awareness and hope for a better policy approach, it's also important to insist on the fact that those who decide are already in the middle of a team that they don't necessarily understand. Finally, I would make my point that Belgium itself is quite strategic for the Belt and Road Initiative, for instance, and is many times presented as the center or the heart of Europe. So I decided to focus on four case studies, four organizations that each represent an aspect of the Chinese influence strategy. So I'll overlook briefly the highlights of the CCP's influence operations in each case. The first case is a case of economic influence with the participation of the CCPIT, so the main Chinese organ that promotes trade and investment abroad. My second case concerns organized propaganda around tourism and culture, and in the frame of the Belt and Road Initiative and with a political aspect. My third case concerns propaganda through culture with a close relation with the CPIFFC, the Foreign Affairs Organ in charge of the people-to-people diplomacy. And finally, my fourth case will be focusing on the potential case of scholar corruption. So now let's examine each organization. So the first organization I focused on is the Belgium-China Chamber of Commerce, which is the one I focused the most because not only it's extremely active, but it's also very well connected to the economic influence system, to the point that it's almost embedded in its structure. So this is certainly the most active CCPIT Brussels, proxy in Brussels. And I think in this context, many initiatives from the chamber should be understood in the scope of its proximity with the CCPIT and its proximity with the diplomatic representations. There are two in Brussels, actually. There is the embassy and the Chinese mission. So the chamber promotes investment and networking opportunities. It's kind of its main selling argument. And it works closely with regional trade agencies. As the main partner of the CCPIT, the chamber signed various agreements and with the trade agencies, but also just between those two organizations. And there is one that was really interesting. In 2019, they signed a legal cooperation committee initiated by the CCPIT, but I couldn't find much about it. So I don't know what to think about it, but there is definitely like this growing tendency from Beijing to co-opt people who have relations with the legal system. The chamber also intervenes in Chinese overseas affairs, although my work doesn't focus much on United Front work, but I've noticed collaborations with, for instance, the Association of Chinese Professionals in Belgium. But another example that really attracted my attention was the establishment of a new media, the Saracen Media Group, created by a big figure of the Chinese diaspora called Liu Tingrui, who is the biggest, who owns the biggest Chinese supermarket in Brussels. And he had already launched an online media back in 2017 called the Phoenix Eurasia. So the BCCC, the chamber, sorry, had a role to play in that. And again, it's not very clear, but the chairman was present and he made a speech and expressed his support to the project. And talking about the chairman, he's a lawyer himself, and he really acts as the Belgium expert of the CCPIT. For instance, he was surveyed by a CCPIT research mission sent to Belgium, France, and the Netherlands back in 2019. So it's really important to see that they tried to co-opt. I mean, it's not something new. At this point, we already know it, but this really shows how they try to co-opt local elites also to carry out their entrance work. But, and I think this is the most remarkable in one of the interventions of the chamber's chairman, because he co-founded the Obor Committee in 2016, which brings me to my second point, the Obor Committee. The real name is the Europe-China One Belt, One Road Culture and Tourism Development Committee. And it's an intergroup at the European Parliament. It works kind of on the same model as the EU-China Friendship Group. It's basically a coalition of MEPs, of deputies of the European Parliament. It makes sense because in light, because we've noticed that the Parliament recently has been one of the most critical voices on China. I'm thinking about the Sakharov Prize to Ilham Tohti or the condemnation of the repression in Hong Kong. And this kind of groups kind of sustains the propaganda with the fundamental idea that there is a sort of unity, that the Belt and Road Initiative is a federative project, for instance. The chairman himself of the group, of the committee, is the MEP István Wihei. He's a socialist Hungarian who's quite into China. He's, for example, a member of the EU-China Friendship Group. And most interestingly, he actually founded the Confucius Institute back in his hometown in Hungary. He's been to China quite a few times, but one trip that attracted my attention was in 2019, for instance, when he went to Haikou with his parliamentary assistants, and he met with several CEOs and CCP officials, provincial representatives, and there they signed for a Europe Shenzhen Center with the Belt and Road Research Institute, so it says a lot. Another interesting aspect of the Obor Committee that I've noticed is in Brussels this time, but we've noticed that there is a sort of cluster of organizations that gravitate around the Obor Committee. So those organizations are PR companies, cultural associations, tourism and investment companies. So, but they all have one single objective: it's to promote the Belt and Road Initiative through culture and tourism. So they all employ almost the same employee. It's quite striking. And they're all more or less connected to the diplomatic representations or to state-owned companies or to CCP organs. If I may, I have an example which is quite illustrative. It's Wang Haichen. He's the chief representative of the Belgian office of the EU Committee of the China-Europe Association for Technical and Economic Cooperation, which is supervised by the Ministry of Commerce. But he's also he also works for the Wallon Trade Agency, and he also works for a PR company that is a Chinese PR company owned by a Chinese state-owned company. He also participates to the China Arts Festival, which was a bunch of cultural events organized throughout Europe. And he also owns his own export company, Semaphore. So there is, I think it illustrates quite well my point here. My third, the third organization on which I focused is the Belgium China Association, which is the oldest friendship association in Belgium that works as a very prolific propaganda machine. It has everything. First, it's strongly connected to the foreign affairs systems through its relation with the CPIFFC and the Hanban, CPIFFC and the Hanban with the propaganda system. The chairman of the Belgium China Association visited CPIFFC representatives several times in China, And in exchange, the Belgium-China Association also received CPIFC delegations in Brussels. The association itself organizes cultural events, language classes, but which I think it's important to really focus on the chairman here, because he received the Friendship Award and he participated to a conference on Marxism in Brussels, co-organized by the CPIFC in 2018. And most importantly, he is the chairman, or allegedly the chairman, of the Confucius Institute in Brussels, which is the only one now. Another element that made me qualify the Belgium-China Association as a propaganda vector is that the association has its own bookstore, Chinese bookstore in Brussels, is the only one in Belgium. And it's actually co-managed by the China International Publishing Group. So I'm echoing the presentation on Poland here. And because the publishing group is actually known for distributing propaganda books abroad. The interesting point with the chairman of the Belgium China Association, and also it's also the case with the chairman of the Belgium China Chamber of Commerce, is that they both have quite a media presence on Chinese media. And they use this presence to speak out to praise Xi Jinping's policies. And one of the most interesting examples that I could find was when the chairman of the Belgium China Association he wrote an open letter to criticize the decision of the Hague's Permanent Court of Arbitration, because there was a conflict back then in the China Southern Sea between China and the Philippines. And as chairman of the association and as chairman of the Confucius Institute, he published this letter reposted on the CPIFFC's website, in which he questions the legitimacy of the court and he accuses the United States of stirring the pot. So really using CCP arguments here. The fourth organization on which I focused was the Brussels Academy for China and European Studies. So it's interesting because it concentrates a lot of China experts in Brussels, and is quite instrumental in co-opting scholars in Brussels and ultimately decision makers. The academy itself was founded in 2014 with Chinese top universities, so Fudan, Sichuan, and Renmin University, and they organize programs, conferences, and research. The main sponsor of the academy is Huawei, so I can't invent it. And we know that Huawei has been quite efficient in Brussels in the past few years. Like, they, for instance, their company opened two research centers in Brussels since 2015. So the academy's Belgian partner is the Flemish Free University of Brussels, or also called the VUB, which has a really strong history of cooperation with China. It's quite embedded in its structure. It has the VUB China Web Network, the Brussels Institute for China and Contemporary Studies, etc. And when we researched the role of the VUB and the Chinese discourse in Brussels, I've noticed that the very establishment of the academy was actually the result of an advocacy effort. The result of an advocacy effort from several VUB teachers who have themselves personal links with China, notably through universities. So the result is quite striking. We have several teachers from the VUB's Chinese network who participate in the activities of the academy, and they both overlap, and they also manage to bring in the activities of the academy teachers that also didn't participate actively in the advocacy effort to establish the academy. So, and there is another movement that is interesting to notice, is that these experts participate to conferences, of course, in Brussels. It's quite active in this field, and it's usually organized in closed circles, so between co-opted institutions who are institutions that have been historically quite lacking in their criticism of China. In the end, it creates sort of a knowledge node, as mentioned before, in the middle of Brussels this time, that actually promotes the CCP's discourse. And it kind of, it's, I mean, the danger here is that it actually influences the decision-making process because the civil society is part of it. So to conclude, I would say that the specificities of Brussels have allowed China's systemic influence to actually thrive, both at the Belgium and at the EU levels. And as it's been said throughout the conference, we need to increase scrutiny on those issues, because by keeping control of the discourse and securing the support of prominent figures in different spheres like political, academic, business, the CCP has become an important force of coercion. And its biggest asset is that it's the lack of understanding by the common person and the decision maker in Brussels. So this ambiguity kind of reinforces also the weight of the CCP's discourse in Brussels, because it gains normative power. It nurtures the idea that there is room for a mutual understanding, while it's actually making sure to conceal the general opaqueness of China's diplomacy, in which the CCP puts so much effort. Thanks.